Our guest this afternoon is Mr. William Bransema, lifetime resident of this community, one who has an exceptionally wide acquaintanceship here. Probably all of our old-timers, as well as large numbers of other residents, have at some time enjoyed the services of this genial businessman through his horse and auto livery of early days or the thriving Bransema transfer from which he retired in 1958. Since his retirement, Billy, as he is generally known, has been living the life of Riley, along with his wife at their comfortable home on Grand River. Today, however, he will revert back to his boyhood, describing his Elliott Street neighborhood and recalling people and events associated with his young manhood. Well, now, Billy, suppose you start and give us a little general idea of the appearance of that Elliott Street neighborhood, like the roads and the sidewalks and so
forth. Well, it was just a gravel road with a few hitching posts where the horses were tied to, and the first house on Elliott Street.
What about the sidewalks in those days?
Well, they were just boardwalks, mm-hmm. and most of the houses had picket fences.
Oh.
And that was a great deal during Halloween night, take the gates away and hide them and take the steps away from the houses.
I suppose they had outdoor toilets in those days, too.
Outdoor toilets in the backyard, and some of them were 40, 50 feet from the house.
Uh-huh.
And the first family that lived,
Shall we start down in the east end?
The west end.
The west
Kenny.
End. We'll start at the west end on the north side of the street first?
Yeah.
Okay.
The first family living the furthest house west before you cross the old bridge to go to the car ferry slip was the Kenny family. It consisted of Margaret and another girl and Edward and Jim. And Edward was about my age, going to school. And my father worked for the Grand Trunk Railway and the Crosby line around there somewhere. And Edward, at one time, I used to walk to school with Ed quite a bit because we lived in the same neighborhood. And he did have a part in a movie.
Oh.
At California.
These are back in the early days of
in
movies.
In the early days. That picture appeared at the theater in Grand Haven, and they advertised it quite widely because Kenny was going to be in the movie, and they drawed quite a big house.
So, I'll bet.
Yeah.
About what time would that be, in the early 1900s?
Well, I don't remember just what year it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next house was Mr. and Mrs. Allen. I don't know anything about those people. I just lived them there when I was a kid. Next house was Kratz, going east. And it was Oscar Kratz and Bernice Kratz and a couple other girls, I think. In fact, I saw Oscar Kratz about 2 or 3 years ago. I talked to him. He was here. Don't know where he was located, but he was here visiting Frank Strang.
Oh.
And then the next house, going west, was von Eithoven.
Sounds like a good Dutchman.
Yeah. And I used to go to the store for the old lady occasionally, and Mr. Vandenberg had a meat market right where the Vin building is now, or they call it the Topper Construction at this day, but that was the Vin building.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Vandenberg, he was the father of Lawrence Vandenberg, the school superintendent. He had a meat market there.
Oh.
And I remember one time distinctly that Mrs. Van Eithoven says, I should get 15 cents worth of boiling meat, and she says, tell Mr. Vandenberg that I want some meat without bones in it. Mm-hmm. And I told Mr. Vandenberg, and he told me, tell Mrs. Van Eithoven they don't raise cows without bones. Well, right back of Van Eithoven was the Beekema family. There was a family of boys, and Mr. I was back there. I guess he pastured them along the railroad tracks mostly and sold some milk. Well, there was quite a bunch of boys. I know there's Pete Beekema, John Beekema, and Jake, and I can't remember all of them, but it's quite a large family. And one girl, Nan Beekema, she died a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry Beekema and Claude Beekema, he went one time run the Bocce Hardware store.
Yes, his daughter's working the courthouse now.
Yeah, well,
that family.
That family, Beekman.
Sure.
Well, then the next family was the Max Ott family. And there was Sarah Ott, Johnny Ott, and a few of the other boys, I don't just remember. And right back of them, along the railroad track, right next to Beekman, was the Barnes family.
Oh, was this John Ott the one you said? Was it
John Ott. Yeah, John Ott is, in later years, before he died, he was engineer or fireman at the school, at the central school. He took care of the boiler room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was married to a Smith girl, a sister to Klaus Smith.
Oh.
That was our original postmaster, assistant postmaster.
Assistant postmaster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the Barnes lived right back of them along the railroad track. Of course, there was no road there, just you walked the ties to get the house. And they had two people, Eddie Barnes and Jeannie Barnes. The old folks died, and Eddie and Jeannie went to the Ottawa County home. As far as I know, they were there 50, 60 years. Then, next house was Klugas. It was Henry Klugas and Ed Klugas. And Mr. Klugas, all these people worked along the railroad or the Crosby line.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Klugas worked for the Grand Trunk. Henry and Ed. Henry married Ann Vandernoot.
She was the one?
And I think there's one girl living, Martha. She's married to a Berg. And I think she's still living. She must be close to 90 years old. Last I knew, she was living with her son out on M-45.
And
she worked in her younger days. She worked, as far as I know, all her life at Ickley College.
Uh-huh.
What her duties were, I don't know.
Uh-huh. And she's still living?
And she's still living, as far as I know.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Next house was Swantag, or the next house was Bronsimer. Uh-huh. That was our old family. There was three of us boys and four girls. I had one brother, Tom, that worked at one time, got a little experience in cutting meat for John Huffman, when John had a grocery and meat market on 6th Street. Then he graduated from there and went to Ed Kinkham on Washington Street, and I think he worked there somewhere around 35, 40 years.
All my childhood, I remember Tommy Bronsma and Ed's, I should say so.
When Kinkham was sold out to Mel Wright, he worked for Mel Wright till Mel Wright closed out the meat market and made a restaurant out of it.
Uh-huh.
My brother then went to work for Mr. Erickson until he was 70 years old and he couldn't work anymore.
Right. Now, was that an older brother of yours?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Tommy was that?
I was the youngest one.
Oh, Tommy was the older one.
The
oldest
one.
What about your father, though?
My father worked at the Crosby line, at the boat line. He worked there practically all his life and... of course, the summer, there wasn't much doing there, and he did get a job for a while to the tannery.
Mm-hmm.
And then in later years, he ended up working at the Story and Clark Piano Company.
But tell about the work down at the boats. I think that...
Well, he worked at the Crosby line there, and he was a trucker. He was not a stevedore. He was a trucker.
Now, that's a hand truck.
A hand truck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't no such thing as high lifts or anything in them days.
No.
He trucked it all by hand. And he... I know he used to go to Cry's Feed Store on the corner of 3rd and Fulton and buy a little box of mica axle grease and had a jackknife, and he'd scrape the axles of his truck and put grease on them so they'd run a little easier. And then they'd hide them way down the end of the warehouse somewhere so some of the other guys wouldn't grab their truck. And
what did they load those days?
The Crosby line came in with mostly flour, and they had two lines of cars, one outside the warehouse and inside line. And as the bags come off the trucks, they always had a push man that had to come off the boats to help push the truck up. The trucks were loaded pretty heavy for hand, and then the man would stand there and holler, first head car, second head car, inside line or outside line, and that's where that particular bag, a load of bags, had to go. And then they had two men in there to throw them up pretty near the roof to load the cars. And sometimes there'd be three boats that stuck in the ice, and they had a room down there, a fair-sized room. They called it the Hunyak room. Big stove in it, and there's where the fellas would all sit until the boat got in. When the boats got in, sometimes there'd be two or three to unload without stopping. They'd work all day, all night, and probably all the next day, as long as they could take it. Some of them worked 38, 6 and 48 hours.
And one shift?
One shift.
Straight through.
Yeah. What? One shift.
Probably didn't get double overtime.
No, straight time. I remember one time they paid 15 cents an hour for trucking.
Oh, my goodness. And that was hard work.
It was hard work. But still, they had a big crew. They had, in the wintertime, usually 100 men or more there, probably more. And they did raise them at one time from 15 cents an hour to 20 cents. And that made the crew pretty happy. They were pretty happy. Going to make $2 a day for 10 hours. So that was pretty good. Well, then, and my brother, I had one brother, he worked in the glass factory along on Water Street.
Now, which brother is this?
This is Ernie Brunson.
This is Ernie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a little bit, I don't remember, a little bit younger than Tom or a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in that same category? And he worked the glass factory when he was a young fella, just got out of school. And I know he had a bicycle. He saved a little money and bought a new bicycle from Mr. Dake down on Washington Street. He had a bicycle shop. And at the time that he was working at the glass shop, Bill Wiles was in the office, running the office.
Oh.
And Bill Wiles and my brother built an old scow boat in our backyard. And then he got to be a cook. He got to be a dishwasher on the boats, I guess, or a potato peeler. And then he got to be a cook. And he cooked in the summer, and then he'd come home in the fall and stay for a little while. And one winter he went and worked in Louisiana at the oil fields, put a winter in there, and came back to spring and went cooking again. And then another winter he come home in the fall and he went to San Francisco. The first winter after the San Francisco earthquake. And he worked there that winter and then come back in spring. Well, then he wasn't feeling too well, so he was home. He came home that fall and he stayed home all winter and all the next summer and the next winter. In fact, 18 months approximately. But during that 18 months, he did go out and do a couple weeks' work cooking for the bartenders and the saloonkeepers. Out to the Ireland farm.
Oh, they had a regular clubhouse?
They had a house out there.
Uh-huh.
He cooked out there, and that's all the work he done. Well, then he got a job. There was a small steamboat with the name of the Della Shores. They're putting in new boilers at Johnson Brothers at Ferrisburg. And he got a job as cook on the Della Shores. They were getting the gang together, the crew, and I asked him if I could go along, and he said, nah, I better stay home. One bum in the family is enough. So I didn't get the job.
You were just a young kid anyhow then, weren't you?
15.
15, oh.
So he got Pete Boot, stepson, and he went with him to the second. And they went to Ludington, put on a load of salt. And then they went up in Lake Superior in a severe storm, and the boat went down with everybody aboard at Whitefish Point, and nobody was ever recovered.
Oh.
And after the boat was gone, one of the officials from the bank, Mr. Sherwood, sent down, and my brother still had $700 in the bank after being out of work for 18 months.
Oh.
And Mr. DeBoo come down. Mr. Peter DeBoo, my brother, belonged to Maccabees. And he came down and he said, of course, we can make you wait 7 years to pay you this insurance. But he says, we know you're... told my mother, we know the boy is gone and we know the boat's down, so we're going to pay you the $1,000. So my mother got the $1,000 within about 7 weeks of the time the boat went down.
So in those days, that was real.
That was all. And then
there was no compensation.
There was no compensation at all. The company figured the boat went down on such a day, and he had so many days' wages coming, and that's what they sent your check for, and that was it.
Yeah, times are certainly better now, aren't they?
No,
right.
No compensation by description.
Mm-mm. Well,
and
then,
sisters. I had my two younger sisters there just under me. I was the third and the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
My two youngest sisters worked a good share of their life. My youngest one worked all her life in her working life. She died when she was quite young, but she worked for the telephone company.
Oh.
And the other one worked for the telephone company. Well, she got a little roaming in her blood, so she went to Chicago and got a job for the telephone company.
Mm-hmm.
And then she worked in Cleveland for the telephone company.
Mm-hmm.
She finally ended up in California, worked for some plastic plant that was connected with the film industry in some respect.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked there until she retired.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last, probably 14, 15 years, she was spending about 6 months a year here in our own homestead and 6 months a year in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And this fall, I took her to Chicago and put her on a plane. She'd always rode the buses before. She wouldn't ride a plane. This is her first plane trip.
Mm-hmm.
I took her to Chicago about in October this year, and she got on a plane, and it happened to be a 747, the biggest one.
Yeah.
So as the plane was pulling out, the Flight 107 is now leaving with 307 passengers aboard and the crew for Los Angeles. Well, she arrived fine. In fact, she got to Los Angeles before we got back to Grand Haven.
That's right, the change.
Yeah, 3 hours different in time in there, too.
Okay. Well, let's save telling about your own career for a little later on and move along the neighborhood, shall we now?
The next house was Swanag.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a number of boys, Bill and Ed and Fred and Ida and Emma, the girls, and Ida worked for Robbins, taking care of Dorothy.
That's right.
Sort of a nurse girl.
Uh-huh.
And Emma done a lot of sewing.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ida died, Emma took over.
Well, you must get Ida married first.
Ida married Jake DeGlopper.
Right.
And she had two children.
And Don DeGlopper, the
son. Don DeGlopper is one of the boys.
And Louise.
She died when the children were young.
Uh-huh.
So Emma went into Jake's house and helped raise the family.
Really, it was like a second mother to those children.
That's right.
And now Fred, what about Fred?
And he's a young fellow, and he was working for Robbins. But when he first went to work there, he was like all of us. He had to put in a lot of hours, and the Chicago boat would get in the Goodrich line. The boat would get into Grand Haven around 4:30, and I can hear in the summer when the windows were open, Mrs. Swanack begging Fred to get out of bed, because he was like all us young fellows. He stayed out a little too late at night. So she'd say, "Fred, please get up, please get up." And I could hear him sometimes through the window. She'd beg Fred to get up. Well, I said, Fred had to be at the boat there about 4 o'clock or a little after.
Oh, my gracious.
Well, and the rest of the boys, Fred was the last one living.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school with all them kids along there, Swanites. And the next house was Pete Copeman.
Oh.
And he was a bartender for Coyman.
Oh.
Coyman died, and Pete took over the saloon. And then the next house was Van Bennigan. And they had Keneal Van Bennigan, one boy, and two or three girls. I don't just... One of the girls, if I remember right, worked at Addison's store for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then the next house was the Van Moorns, two Van Moorns, old bachelors, Garrett Vermorn and Ty. Well, Ty, us kids wasn't so afraid of. He didn't get so drunk, but Ty got pretty drunk, and he was pretty scared when we'd go by there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went across the street. We'd go to Zitlow's.
Oh, we're on the corner now.
We're on the corner. And,
That'll be the corner of Pellet and 2nd Street,
yes,
then, we are?
That's right.
Because 1st Street apparently didn't go through on the north side, apparently, did it?
Yes, it did.
Oh, it did it.
1st
oh.
Street went right through
oh,
to the dump.
Oh, you didn't.
That was a dump.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So now we're up to 2nd Street.
We're at the second block going west, going east.
And now we cross over.
We cross 1st.
And you get
2nd
to get the Zitlows.
Yeah, Zitlows was there. John Zitlow, he worked for years for the Vin Company. In fact, it was selling kerosene, and he drove the oil wagons, I remember right. And they had a couple of girls, Marie Zitlow, she married Otto Gruntz, and then it was Clara Zitlow married Swartz. In fact, Harold Swartz's mother was a little girl.
Oh.
Yeah. Then the next house was a Zimmer. Quite a large family, and they, Mr. Zimmer had a blacksmith shop right near the corner of Columbus and 2nd Street. Right near where Brian's Cleaners later was, right in that.
The back of the newsstand.
Yes, back of the newsstand, near the other corner.
I see.
That was Zimmer's, Zimmer's blacksmith shop.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, us kids going to Columbus Street School, we'd stop there and see him straighten that iron out, shoe horses and so on. Well, I didn't know too much about Zimmer's. And the next is the Glazett home. Bill and Carl and the two Glazett girls are still living in the house.
Well, I mean, I'm Theora.
Yeah, they're still living there. And Bill Glazett, his father was superintendent or foreman at Dake Engine Company.
Of the machine shop. I think he was superintendent
of the machine shop.
I think so.
And then when Bill's father died, Bill took over.
Yeah.
And he was there when Jacob and Johnson took over.
He just died recently.
He just died a few years back.
He was retired, of course,
in the meantime. And then the next house was Kotz, the Kotz house. That was Emil and Alec and Frank Kotz. They had three boys.
Now, how would that be related to Myrtle Kieft?
Yeah, that's...
How was she a...
Her father was a Kotz boy, Frank Kotz.
I see.
Yeah, but between Glazett and Kotz, I skipped that, there was a family there by the name of Ringelberg, but I don't know if there's any relation to these Ringelbergs that run the channel of stamping and porcelain or not, I don't know, but the family name of Ringelberg. But the Kotz family was quite popular there. There was Alec and Emil and Frank. Frank was Myrtle's father. And Alec, he drove the beer wagon, as I remember, for Ed Smith when Ed Smith had a saloon.
Oh, yes.
And Emil, he worked down at the corn planter all his life, as far as I know. Then the next house was the Scotts. Bentley Scott, I think, wasn't it?
Bentley Scott and Maud Scott.
And Maud Scott.
I remember them very well. Bentley Scott married one of the Spital girls
that lived
on the hill.
That's right.
And Maud Scott.
Luke Spital's brother.
Sister. Marion Spital,
right.
Very fine chap.
Yeah.
And Maud married a man in Grand Rapids, I remember. She married very well.
Oh, yeah.
And then after she died, Mrs. Lilly, Ella Lilly, the Finlays were half-sisters, brought up the little girl after that.
Well, the next house next to Walsh's was D. Baker. They called him Dick Baker, but I guess his name was Dirk Baker.
Sure.
And, of course, there was John Baker and another Baker boy, and Della Baker. It was two or three girls.
Two girls. John was the... And the girls were of a second marriage, and that must have been the ones that you knew.
Yeah.
His first wife was a Cry, and their one child was Will Baker.
Yeah.
He was in with the father, D. Baker and son.
Yeah.
Then he moved to Battle Creek. When I was in fifth grade, I know, because one of the sons, were friends of ours.
I knew Johnny real well.
So
all
Johnny,
the kids we got together.
Wouldn't Johnny be about your age?
Yeah, John
Baker?
In that neighborhood, And we all met going to school together. When we first went, Central Park was still a cemetery.
Oh, yeah.
And then it got to be a park. But there was a gang of us kids along there, Gerald Koch and Johnny Baker and the Swanack boys and Bentley Scott, Ed Kinney and all of us.
What did you do for recreation for the most part?
Well, we didn't do much of anything. Most everybody had a little job to do. And when I got a little older, I took cows to pasture for Bossman. He pastured his cows in Duncan Woods. Took them up in the morning, brought them back at night.
You mean they go way up?
We'll walk right up Second Street Hill with five or six, seven cattle and drive them, you know, loose up to the pasture and back. That was my job for a while. And then I peddled milk for Bossman.
Well, now, where did Bossman live?
Bossman lived on Madison Street.
Oh, I see.
Right next to Zerner's there.
And
Bossman finally moved out on Ferry Street and had a farm, dairy farm. And then I got a job after that for Henry Sprick, which is John McSkelliman's grandfather, and taking cows to pasture. I was getting 40 cents a week from Bossman, but I was getting 50 cents a week from Henry Sprick. The first year or two, we took him to Davis's Field. That's right across the track from Baker, where Baker's Lumber Yard now is. There was no housing there, and we called that Baker's or Davis Field, and that's where they used to have a circus now and then. Well, that got built up a little bit, and then we drove the cows further, just south, two or three blocks south of the ferry school. And at that time, I was big enough, so Sprick furnished a pony most of the time. So I was way ahead of all the rest of the kids. I could ride a pony to get the cows and take them in the morning.
So you herded the cows with
the
pony?
Well, just herded them loose.
Yeah, that was a pony. Well, that must have been great. Well, I think we're going to have to wind up for today, but then next month's program, we want you to go down the other side of the street and recall some of the other things.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bronsma, for being with us this afternoon.
That's good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.